with the latest in technology news and views. This is TechWrap, the podcast.
G'day, welcome to TechWrap, the podcast. We are online at techwrap.net. You can email anytime you like. The email address is mail@techwrap.net. We're also on the social media platforms as well. You can find us by searching TechWrap Australia on Facebook and on the Twitter. We're still TechWrap podcast. Long time no chat, Will.
Yeah, it's been a while. Good to be back. What have you been up to? You've been taking a bit of a break? You've been working hard? Any exciting adventures or travel stories or
I work
encountering
hard for
any
the
new
money,
tech?
So I've kept myself well occupied for a little while now.
No you know, vacations?
Oh, not for a few months anyway. Gone to Sydney a couple of times. Done some.
It's always good to get away.
Techie tech things like gatherings with other community radio technologists because I dabble in both the commercial and community radio scenes, of course.
Yes, it's all very exciting stuff. On my end, also been keeping pretty busy. Recently, I've got a couple of new toys to play with. Two things to talk about and I will also be releasing some reviews of these products on the website and the YouTube, so keep an eye out for those as well as the social media. The first one is a brand new wallet, Geddes. And you might say, how does a wallet relate to sort of tech? Well, the lining of this wallet comes with RFID protection.
So you're basically using a paranoid pocket.
Into the wallet. Now, we're living in a busy city, Geddes, coming on and off public transport every day, you never know. Someone might swipe my pocket and pick up my credit card information.
So it means you have to do like other people do and get your pass for using public transport out of your pocket.
Because this is the thing.
You can't use your wallet to do that anymore.
Well, I never really did use my wallet to do that before because with the plethora of credit cards and other, you know, activatables like a student card or your bank card with your tap and pay plus your travel by Mikey living in Melbourne, you try to put your wallet to the sensor. It picks up multiple cards anyway and it doesn't read the card you want to in the first place. So I've tried this with my wallet and I've even had my Mikey card right at the front of the wallet and I've gone to tap on and it detects more than one card because I have my bank card right next to my Mikey card and it just goes blah, 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 blah. So I've always had to take my card out of my wallet anyway, but new developments, Mikey has gone mobile.
They have indeed. You can finally, now, it's taken them a little while though.
Yeah, you can now load your Mikey card onto your Google Pay, not quite Apple Pay at this stage, so you can't load it onto your Apple phone, but I'm sure that will come pretty soon after. You don't even need to pull out your card out of your wallet, so your point, null and void, Geddes.
Not quite.
I tell you though, my old wallet, falling apart quite horribly, and it's one of those things that you don't normally replace, is it? Like, it's the last thing you think of, and you only ever replace it when, say, money's falling out or there's rips halfway down there.
Well, it's the last thing you want to replace anyway.
How often do you replace your wallet?
Oh, once every 5 or 10 years, probably.
How long is that? Such a long time. But I'll tell you what, I've always been sort of a minimalist when it comes to wallet designs.
You're a minimalist with a lot of things.
Yeah, and so this wallet, it's very thin, and the whole idea of it is to sort of keep your cards to a minimum. So no coins in there, no messing around, your essential cards. Like, it can, like, hold up to a heap of cards, but obviously the less is better. And do you know what another good thing about getting a new wallet was? Transferring all my old cards to the new wallet. You look at some of the cards you have in there and you go, my God, why do I have this Sizzler card, then they went out of business like 15 years ago, still in there. You know what I mean? Like,
so you're not the kind of person who tries to economize by going through every so often and actually cleaning it out.
No, you never. Who does that? The only time you ever clean your wallet out is when you buy a new one. You're transferring all your cards across and you go, what on earth did I have this in there for this whole time? I could have gotten rid of this ages ago. So it's been great for that. I think I reduced about 3 or 4 cards that I just did not need, and my wallet previously was already thin as it was. Yeah. So I'm so lightweight now. I tell you what, I could almost fly.
I think that's still a bit impossible, though.
Oh well, it depends. It's all a matter of perspective, isn't it?
Tell us about that.
My other exciting new toy, and I know we've been talking about this on and off for many a moons, and there's been posts on the website about this particular genre of products, and it is an electric skateboard.
You've demoed them in the past. You've never made an electric skateboard your thing, but you've been thinking about it.
I've been thinking about it for such a long time, and you know, attending various events and seeing other people with electric skateboards and riding them, you know, every chance I've got. I've never actually sort of had one of my own to sort of put through its paces, and that arrived last week, and I tell you what, it started raining the second it got here, and it was miserable for like almost a week straight. I'm like, every time I wake up in the morning, I'm looking out the window and I'm praying for a sunny day, and it's just rain and rain, and I'm just like so sad.
And part of this is because you're living in the city that has four seasons in one day.
It's ridiculous. Your weather is a little bit more consistent than mine, but I've been fortunate enough mid last week to take it out sort of for the first time, and it was an absolute joy. So the board I'm talking about in particular, it's a Meepo board, which is out of China. This is the V3, which is their third iteration of the board. Well, it's a little bit more than that, because they released the V1, the 1.5, the 2, and then I think there was a 2 VP or something like that, and then the 3. So kind of like the fifth mod of generation, but they've called it the V3, and it's kind of their entry-level board. Now, it's about $600 Australian to get your hands dirty with the board.
Which is not too bad for the price of a board, considering what it is. It's an electric one. So there's a bit of work in that.
And considering you look around, especially if you're buying local here in Australia, and some of the more well-known commercial brands in America, like Boosted Board, they retail for about $1,500, $1,600. And other board, like Evolves, can get up to about $2,000. So when you compare it with those sort of boards, it's bloody brilliant price. Do you want to hear some of the stats?
Yeah, well, one of the things I've got in my mind right now is the life of the battery.
Battery life, like how the range, how much range can I get out of the board before it dies? Well, the standard battery, they say 17 kilometers.
Which is a sizable number.
What do you think? So I rode it to work last week, and I tell you what, absolute joy. It's been eating away at me every time I've had to tram into the city, and you just get on there at like 8:30 in the morning and you are packed in there like cattle, and you're lucky enough not to experience this, but you're just like shoulder to shoulder with people, and you know, there's various noises happening and there's smells in the air, and it's just a miserable experience. You put your headphones on, you just try to block it out and pretend you're in Hawaii somewhere.
I have done it once or twice, but not for a long time.
Oh yeah, but almost every day.
Yeah, you do it
consecutively. And then tram issues, breakdowns, delays. It is the worst. And I was thinking about riding my bike, but I was like, that requires effort, so I didn't really want to do that.
Poor thing.
So I rode the board to work, and I tracked it on Google Maps, and it was about 7.6 kilometers, and the board got down to about maybe 60%.
Yeah. Oh, that's charge. Good.
So that 17 really kilometer range is looking pretty accurate. I'm going to do a full on range test with the board and see how far we can actually get out of it. Top speed, Geddes, what do you think?
15 kilometers.
Whoa. If this was the Price is Right, I'd be saying higher right now. I'm just going to give it to you. Top speed, 45 kilometers an hour.
Geez, that's a bit quick for a skateboard.
That's nuts. Now, I'll admit to you, I haven't been that fast yet because it's a bit hairy. The fastest I've got was about 37, and then I started to get kind of the wobbles on the wheel. So I need to tighten up the trucks a little bit, and then I might be able to get up to 45. And I tell you what, yeah, on a path, it's all right, but then, you know, you're riding in the bike lane and you got cars on the right, it's a little bit,
You've got a lot of variables in the city and, you know, considering the fact that when you ride on a push bike, you don't go all that fast then.
Do you know what? I was riding to work and I was overtaking people on their bikes and I almost felt bad about it. I was like, sorry, they're putting all this effort in. They're in their Lycra suits and they're sweating away and I'm just like cruising past them. Not a sweat on me, just, you know, and they'd be like, oh, damn that guy. I was a bit concerned about the cyclists, whether or not they'd accept me, because, you know, they can be quite possessive of their bicycle lanes and aggressive towards vehicles and things like that. And then here's me coming along an electric skateboard sort of in their lane. And I was like, oh, no, what's going to happen? Are they going to hate me? Are they going to glare at me? But so far, so good. Smiles. One guy even asked me, he's like, oh, how far do you get on that thing? So I think he's like tired of riding his bike. He was thinking about getting one.
He's keen to jump on board as well.
Yeah, but, you know, I try to be as respectful as possible. Like, I'm not trying to shoot past them and, you know, I don't ride close to them. So I'll sort of stay behind them if we're all heading to work, because there is a lot of cyclists that head to work in Melbourne. So I'll sort of just, you know, stick to my place in the line. We'll pull up to the lights, I'll brake, I'll sit behind them, I won't try and overtake them and things like this. So I'm as courteous as I can be, and I think they can see that. And so they're like, oh, he's one of the good ones.
Cool.
So do you remember when ages ago we had that, what was it, the hoverboard in the office?
Oh, yes, the good old two-wheeled battery-powered things that you, basically stood on and you pushed your weight on a bit of an angle to make it go forward or backward or side to side. And yeah, that was a little bit of a fun for 5 minutes.
I think that was just on the cusp of when electric skateboards were becoming a thing. It was kind of the early entry into the sort of the world, wasn't it?
But the world shot them down as well. That was a big thing.
Yeah, because they exploded or people got injured, severely injured off them, and they were banned in everywhere and workplaces across the country were banned them and things like this.
But, you know, I thought that was really ridiculous because, you know, the whole concept of a human using something can cause injuries whichever way, and you can't ban stupidity.
Well, it's like survival of the fittest, isn't it, really? take all the warning labels off everything and then let the problem solve itself, huh?
Well, yeah, you could try it that way.
But I tell you what, Geddes, it's changed my whole perspective on life. Like, I rock up to work, I've got a big smile on my face, I'm not grumpy from being on the trams, and I get to ride through parks and I see the leaves falling. And just earlier today, it was such a beautiful day. I went down and rode along sort of the coast along the beach, and it was just absolutely beautiful. 0 to 30 kilometers an hour they boast in about 4.5 seconds if you throw down the acceleration. Jeez. you can braking from 30 kilometers an hour to a standstill, they reckon, in about 10 meters.
Yep.
So not bad, like pretty good. Uphill grades of about 30%. You can go about 20 kilometers at a 15 degree slope. Like, this thing kicks ass.
So how do you make these things move? Just curious.
Well, they have a remote. They have a remote that you hold onto, and there's a wheel, a slide wheel. So to move forward, you just push the wheel forward, and then to brake, you just throw it backwards, and that's essentially it. So it's really easy to pick up, because with a traditional skateboard, you got to sort of keep one leg on the board, and then you have to kick it with your other leg, and there's that whole balance, and then you ride it for a bit, and then you go back, and then you have to foot brake. There's all these skills and factors, but with the electric board, you just balance there and then sort of like you're on the board the whole time. So once you got your balance, you just use the remote to control your speed and braking. And it's just, it's a lot easier to pick up. And every day I'm just getting more and more confident.
I think even I could pick that one up if that was the case.
I definitely do. And then I can't wait for you to actually come down and visit, or I head back up to where you are and give you a go, and then you can give me your thoughts and impressions. So, and I'll also be filming a video of the Meepo Board V3 that will be chuck it up on the website and the YouTube, so you can check it out and see all the stats and see me messing around with it, hopefully not falling off yet.
You'd have to be on pretty fast to fall off.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm being pretty sensible. Like, I don't have any no rush to hit 45. Like, I don't feel the need for speed in that sense. Yeah. I value my limbs and my bones, I think.
Well, at this current time, anyway.
Reaching a top speed. Yeah, at this time. I know they always say, like, you always want faster. Like, with a motorbike, you get a new motorbike and then the 250cc, and they're like, oh, you want more. And then you crash and then you never want to ride it again. I guess that's the cycle. But no, I'm keeping everything into perspective, and so safety is my number one thing. And so anyone else riding a board, also, safety should be the number one factor. You yourself have got a new toy, well, relatively new anyway, since we last spoke. I know up until this point in the podcast, if you have been listening along, Mr. Trent Geddes has been an avid Apple fanboy and has owned a plethora of Apple products.
I wouldn't call it being an Apple fanboy using a mobile phone. I'd say a big supporter. I didn't have any of their other Fandangle gadgets because I guess I've been there and tried it over times, and I've just decided it isn't quite for me.
Yeah, so this is very exciting. You've come over to the dark side and you now have an Android device.
You're calling it the dark side anyway.
The more fun side, the more customizable side.
I just think now we have a few years up the belt. Android development has gone a considerable way, and it's actually making it easier for people of all varieties of skills to be able to operate them. Because what I saw when I originally saw Android in its early forms was something that was a little bit convoluted to some. Menu structure between applications and the operating system generally was a bit, ho-hum. Things were a bit more difficult to find and work out. And, you know, there are manufacturers who are building skins of the operating system now to make it a little bit easier to navigate for those people who are, you know, either new to phones or they're jumping across from the other big operating system. So it's making room for everyone now, and they've come a long way, and I've jumped in.
Yeah, and they make it just so easy for you to make that switch as well, don't you? Don't they? Like, you can just transfer everything from your old phone, Apple, across to the Android, and just everything saved and moved across seamlessly.
Or vice versa, if you happen to be moving across the other way and going back to, to an
iPhone.
This
is true.
You can do it, and, you know, it's not that difficult. I jumped across purely on cost because, Apple, with their new fandangled phones, are just getting a little bit more ridiculous as time goes on. You know, they're charging, $1,500 or more for a handset.
It's nuts.
When you go on a plan, you're spending, $130, $140, $150 a month, which is absolutely ridiculous for, the phone component of it. So, once my 12-month section of my lease ended with the provider Optus, who I've been with for a couple of years now, I decided, well, maybe it's time to have a look at another option. And I'd been scoping out for a little while, and I landed on Huawei Mate 20 Pro, which, of course, they come out mid to late last year. They've certainly been the bunch of innovators with relation to their, phone technologies. The fact that the cameras are quite brilliant. There's three cameras in this device. It's also got a sizable amount of RAM and a CPU, which, is on par with some of the other big mobile brands as well in the Android leagues. And
how is the camera?
The camera is good.
Because I know you're a bit of a budding photographer, and you do have a you know, a full proper DSLR camera that you also take photos with. Now, would this phone replace that camera?
No. Well, no, not okay. for people who, you know, have a decent skill set and can operate a proper SLR camera. You're going to get more out of that. Of course, one of the big things you're going to get out of having, you know, a standard camera, like an SLR camera, is the zoom. You're never going to find a quality zoom True. In a smartphone because you're jamming, you know, quite a bit of technology into a small space. And, you know, with a traditional camera, you've got that room to move. The lenses can expand out and you know, really do what they do best. But for, you know, your normal point and shoot stuff
in day-to-day.
A few forms of lighting, these smartphones are great. I mean, the back camera is a main 40-megapixel camera. It touts
That's
to
insane.
Be. And, you know, it takes some really good macro-style shots. I have got a fine example, which, you know, maybe I should put up on the website.
Throw
or put
it up on
the social
the,
media
yeah, on
or
Instagram.
Something. I have a picture of a bee that I took a photo of. You know, I spent
what was this bee doing?
Five
was
or 10 minutes
collecting nectar from a flower. Was it pollinating?
It was collecting a sugary substance off a table at a winery. So you can imagine what kind of product that is.
Yes. Wow, that sounds like a great shot. You'll have to send that to me after the podcast so I can have a look at it.
It was really detailed, and I did, of course, get the lighting right. So, you know, there's no grainy picture in it, but, you know, it did a fantastic job for what it is. And even many of the point-and-shoot shots are great too. You can, you know, zoom in on the people you want to take the photo of, and it'll, you know, apply automatic blurring to the backgrounds and you know, clean up some details.
Yes.
You know, it's been really good as a point-and-shoot camera. And the other redeeming feature in this thing is battery as well.
So that's great, Nolan. I'm very pleased that you've finally come over to Android because it means we can just, you know, have so much more in common now. But did I hear right that you said the make of your phone was Huawei?
Huawei.
Uh-oh. Isn't that a little bit of a problem now? They're in a little bit of hot water with the United States government, aren't they? And it's affecting things that can be put on the phone software and as well as hardware components. Does this leave you now in the water in terms of support?
It affects future models.
Been happening?
It affects future models of the smartphones at this point in time. But if you really like go back to what's going on, it's really one of those big battles the US likes to have with other countries. You know, they've been saying for a little while that they, you know, reckon China has been spying on the US or, you know, people in its country based on the infrastructure devices they have or the company in general. You know, Huawei has been caught in the past, you know, borrowing equipment from other manufacturers and basically, you know, copying the details of these products to recreate their own. Some of the things that are said out there are a little bit unfounded. Of course, I'm not defending the potential for the Chinese government to be, you know, looking out for something. But from general observations of the mobile handsets, you know, these devices aren't affected. They don't have holes. You know, the only country where monitoring is going on to an end user with a mobile handset is China itself. But that's how the Chinese government moderates their internet connectivity already. In terms of the bans, yes, there is a current ban. It does not prevent the current people that have handsets, whether they're Mate 20 Pros, whether they've got the P30 Pro. These are all current handsets. The Android development support has stopped for all future handsets, but the current ones have their existing software updates. So the idea of not getting any updates for the phone is not going to be a thing. You know, they're going to continue these security updates for considerable amount of time. But, of course, the other factor is China and Huawei in general have actually sort of said, well, you know, I don't think we like this. We're going to challenge it in the courts. So, you know, in around a month's time, we're going to hear more about this Huawei case. And depending upon how it floats and you know, whether, you know, the USA has been able to legally do what they're doing, we'll find out the real details soon as to whether it is going to be a definite or not.
Huawei is the second largest maker of smartphones in the world.
They are, and they're one of the biggest innovators at this point in time as well.
Yeah, they've come out with some amazing phones with some amazing tech jammed into them at really affordable and competitive price points. And I think maybe, I guess the fear is that there could be some malicious like malware on the phones that could be activated any time, activate the microphone and then send it off to, you know, the Chinese government, I guess, to listen in on conversations and, you know, pose a security risk. But, like, yeah, it's all a bit, who knows? I guess you're right. We'll see what happens in the courts and stuff. But in the meantime, I think I was reading that Huawei, Google revoked the licenses for its to install its software, like the Google Play and Gmail and stuff, onto new devices moving forward.
Yes.
And then I also was reading Facebook now has allegedly told Huawei not to pre-install Facebook, WhatsApp and Instagram on devices. So there's... But, you know, you can still, after the fact, you install those yourself from third-party websites. So, you know, the APK, you could get those apps on there. Just accessing them might be a little bit different. I wonder if Huawei are going to produce their own independent operating system just to try and stop this happening in the future.
Based on the Android platform, they have worked on things in the past. I've also got one of the Huawei Watch GTs because... they did a promotion earlier this year where you could get the mobile phone, and when you got the mobile phone, you could basically send your invoice in and you'd be able to claim a watch as well. And that particular watch is based on the Android platform, but it's their own, I guess, base code as well. So it's made to run efficiency. It's made to use less battery than the main Android watch operating system does. So... You know, if you take a page of that, they've already been working on an operating system and they'll be, you know, considering the idea if it does get to a sticky where they'll be running their own operating system. There's been patents put out for it as well, but nothing out in the public form at this point in time. It's another one of those watch and see, because I guess everything teeters on, you know, whether they get the ability to get that license back from... being able to use Android, you know, from Google, the branch of what Google has done with it, and, you know, any other concerns that they've currently got between, you know, China and the USA, which is having a smack-on effect with all sorts of things, including, you know, the chip manufacturers that they're dealing with too.
So, yeah, they get a lot of their chips from America, but... now they're looking at producing those components themselves, and this could be a big push for Huawei to sort of make the whole ecosystem on their own. They could make all the chips, they could make all the software. And I was reading something that people are speculating that that could potentially be more of a security risk for them to completely produce everything themselves, because they could create their own operating system, they could not have it open source, they could close off parts of the code from the outside, they'd control all the chips and all the hardware components as well. So then that whole theory of a security risk, they could then put malware into that phones and then outside sources might even not know that's there. And there's a big argument to say, look, at least if it's running Android and it has all the Google suite of software, we can scan, you know, the phone for any potential malware. We have control of the chips. We know what's going to be in the phone and on the phone.
Google's listening to
you. At least the US controls... have part of that. That's really funny, because I was saying Google, okay Google, and then my phone started listening to me. We're talking about Google and
Big Brother's watching.
It's like its ears perked up. It's like, are you talking about me? What can I do? That's pretty funny. So forget about China listening to you. Bloody Google's doing it right now. So what does it matter? Like,
and if you've got Amazon Alexa listens to you
as
well.
Oh, yeah. Did you read that not long ago? How it's like it's always listening, and there wasn't there some sort of security breach with that? Like, and no, there was people, because when the
people... people who were concerned about it, because there are people who work for Amazon who basically listen to recordings and analyze that data. There's also been cases as well where information
and remember
has been
when
requested.
Alexa first came out, they're like, everyone's like, oh, they'll never listen to you, and but then here were people listening to exactly what you were saying in your room. It's nuts.
Just a little bit. But we've gone beyond the Huawei scope now, haven't we?
Yeah, I guess we'll just have to wait and see what happens with the Huawei stuff. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Do you think they should forget about Google and just develop it all on their own, ecosystem? Or do you think they should keep using the Google?
I absolutely don't think that their own ecosystem is the way to go, because that means it's going to segment the market up into a third component, and it's not necessarily going to be... all that successful in the international scope of their distribution.
Look at the Windows. What happened with Windows Phone?
Well, Windows Phone battled for a long time, and it did have its fans, but they lost out in the end because, you know, the vast amount of users are on iOS or they're on the Android platforms.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to wait and see in the coming months, and of course we will keep you all updated, and I'm sure this is not the last we'll talk about it, Geddes. As an owner of a Huawei phone, you're quite vested in the outcome of this.
Well, not only the fact that I've got a handset now, just the fact that it is big tech conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. So for all those reasons, we will be keeping you all updated. In other phone news, keeping along with the theme, my current phone right now is the Galaxy Note 9, and it's been an absolute stellar of a device, and I've been loving every day that I turn it on and I get to use it and look at that beautiful screen and play with the pen. There's been news coming out recently of the Galaxy Note 10, the 10th iteration of the device.
Well, they got their 10th iteration of their other smartphones out already.
Yeah, the Galaxy S10.
And into the 5G variants
too. The Galaxy S10. Yeah, I was just going to say, one of the first 5G-enabled devices here in Australia is the Galaxy S10. So I'm assuming the same thing will happen with the Note 10. They're speculating a couple of different releases of the phone. So there'll be the Note 10 regular and then the Note 10 Pro, and then potentially... 5G version. There's a bit of speculation going at the minute, but I'd imagine these phones should default come with 5G, or if
I
they save
too.
The 5G for the Pro version, I don't know.
But I don't know of their implementation of 5G in the handsets at the moment, how that affects the other radios in the device. Can it listen to multiple frequencies, or is it just one 5G component? I haven't really looked into the phones because, you know, to be brutally honest, 5G coverage area in Australia at the moment and for, you know, a year or two to come is quite minuscule. You've got, you know, some areas in your capital cities across the eastern seaboard, and then, you know, one or two smaller regional locations may have it, but, you know, it's not worth having a phone at this point in time for the 5G function.
Yeah, I wouldn't specifically look for that. You're right. You're at least a couple of years out for that one. You've seen the punch hole design of those infinity screens.
Yeah, and there's a few manufacturers using that punch hole design too now.
So the Note 10 will probably go for that sort of theme. I don't know how I feel about it. I'm undecided at this point. I do like the whole infinity screen look, the punch hole. But jury's out on that one for me.
But while you're questioning that, did you or did you not like notches?
No, I hated notches. Absolutely hated the notch.
So you can't win either way with you.
No. Look, just give me like a little bit of a bezel. Like, I think the Note 9 was perfect. It's not that intrusive. And that for that whole infinity look, maybe you get used to it. I don't know. I'd need to see one in person.
But you know what? You get used to notches as well, because my Mate 20 has a notch, and I see advantages in it.
Hmm. up to 12 gigabytes of RAM, which is ridiculous.
That's a ridiculous amount of RAM, considering...
Why do you need that much RAM?
The phone that I've got at the moment's got about 6 gig of RAM. That flies.
That's fine.
And you know, it beats other handsets. I've done handset tests with other phone nerds around my workplace, and mine's beaten them hands down.
Oh, man. But the other thing with these phones, and you touched on this when you were talking about the Apple devices, is the price point. Now, the Note series is one of the most expensive in the lineup, and now with this release of this Note 10 Pro, which will probably be ridiculous, we're looking at almost $2,000, I'm thinking, for these Note 10 devices. The Note 9, when it first came out, was about $1,500, $1,600, depending on the version you got. I picked up mine for $1,200 just because, you know, I needed the upgrade sort of pretty soon. I hadn't upgraded in 4 years, so I was like, yeah, let's.
I don't know how you do that.
Well, because I don't buy a new phone in 4 years, right? So I'm saving up, and my phone plans, I find and scope out the best phone plan. So I might be paying like $30, $35 a month for my phone, and then I don't buy a new phone for 4 years, right? So it's like, oh. $1,200 saved up over 4 years isn't that much, really.
I'm such a nerd that I just can't get through a year.
Yeah, you need the newer phone.
Without a newer phone.
Get the upgrade. I think that's a testament to the Note series that they are able to sort of serve you because they're the top-of-the-line device. They're going to be good for 2 years, 3 years, and then you might want an upgrade. Like, they'll do everything you need them to do. So... we mentioned it just before, 5G rolling out slowly. They reckon it's about 30 times faster than the current NBN, 60 times faster than the 4G
Anything's faster
network.
Than some of the NBN
yeah,
network
that's
here
true.
In Australia, unfortunately.
It's atrocious. That using that 30 times faster as the NBN is a pretty flawed stat, but I guess they're comparing it against the average plan speeds, not the actual realistic plan speeds
could,
you get.
You could compare 4G with NBN as well, and depending upon where you are, it'd trump NBN as well.
Yeah, so I'm with Telstra at the minute, and their coverage still very limited, as you said. They anticipate coverage in select areas of Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Canberra, Perth, Adelaide, Hobart, Launceston and the Gold Coast. I'm not seeing there's Melbourne. I glazed over it. And then the one that gets me, Toowoomba.
Toowoomba, yeah. Well, yeah. They're just trying a large populace, a provincial market with a considerable number of people in it, which is not far from a capital city to scope, you know, whether there's viability in it at this point in time. You know, there could be early adopters as well. I think it's going to go the way of 4G in the form of if mobile network providers don't keep up with, you know, the user base, those speeds that, you know, some people are already reporting at this point in time are going to drop considerably. I remember when 4G first launched and, you know, they started allowing prepaid devices on the Telstra 4G network. And I was uploading 60 megabyte files in a matter of seconds, like less than 10 seconds in some cases. But then, of course, you move forward to now and, you know, sometimes some of those towers struggle because the upgrades are not there.
Yeah, and I think it probably will be the same story with 5G. Some of the speeds and the pricing is going to be ridiculous. It's going to be $70 a month for maybe, like, I think it was, where was it, like 100 gig or something for
$100
a month or something. And you're just going to blow through that. 5G speeds, you're going to blow through that.
It doesn't give you much food.
Yeah, no, but Optus, I think, we're looking at doing an unlimited plan for about $70 a month. So how they're actually going to play that out will be interesting. And they're also looking at doing an Optus wireless to replace or not replace, but as an NBN alternative, $70 a month using the 5G home wireless broadband. So that'll be interesting as well. We're still a long way off. So, you know, we'll talk about this more sort of as it comes out. But did you see the news about the potential of the 5G network to impact weather predictions. Did you see this?
No, I did not see that one.
So there's been quite a lot of articles coming out with all this 5G news, not just here in Australia, but in America as well, and, you know, auctioning off the spectrum, the frequency to the telcos and stuff. And they're saying basically there hasn't been enough research done into that spectrum, whether or not it will affect the satellites, that it's very close, the frequency of 5G, to that of what the satellites use to predict weather forecasts. Now, they reckon if a 5G rollout happened, they could potentially reduce the prediction of the weather by 30% less accurate, which brings it down to about what it was in the 1980s in terms of weather prediction.
That's an interesting one, and it's a bit of a surprise too, because, you know, many people are saying that the, you know, the limitation of 5G is its distance. It's not going to get anywhere near, you know, what 3G used to get in its heyday, even 4G in some parts as well.
Yeah, so like, I was just, one of the examples here they use, the 23.8 gigahertz frequency that they're going to use. Water vapor emits a faint signal at this specific natural wavelength, and this data is monitored and measured by the weather satellites. Forecasts then use this information to work out how a storm or weather system is likely to develop. So that data is critical for their ability to make these forecasts. The problem with some of the 5G phone networks may transmit near a frequency similar to that emitted by the water vapor itself. And so that would produce a signal that looks very, very much like the water vapor presence in the atmosphere. Mm. And they wouldn't be able to tell the difference whether it was the 5G signal or the water vapor they used to then predict storms. Is that not nuts? Yeah, so there's been a lot of this stuff by meteorologists saying, like, look, that this is a high chance that this could happen and impact weather forecasts and readings, and they kind of want them to hold off auctioning off the frequency, and they kind of want that band of frequency not to be used.
This also gets saying, the conspiracy theorists going as to whether, 5G has health impacts as well.
Well, yeah, and there's all that sort of thing, because technology just moves so fast. The radiation emitted in the air and from the phones and everything, Bluetooth, power lines, you know, I mean, it's everywhere. You can quite easily go down that rabbit hole. It's a slippery slope. But, I mean, these are meteorologists coming out and using, data and science and that sort of thing, saying it could be risky. And, I mean, they can't even predict the weather as it is, Geddes. Like, you come to Melbourne, they don't even know what the weather's going to be like tomorrow. And then as the 5G network rolls out, you have no chance.
But you know what? Half of the weather stations in Australia aren't even monitored by people anymore. It's all computerized.
Robots.
They used to have physical people in these weather stations around the country. And you know, now it just happens with a computer. And if the computer breaks, well, you don't have weather updates for a couple of days until they go out and fix it. So...
yeah, we're just going to have to do it the old-fashioned way and just stick our head out the window and then decide what we're going to wear rather than looking at our
phone. That's one way of doing it. A little bit more reliable than Google sometimes. Google told me the other day that the wind chill was 1 degree, and I stepped outside and it felt like 10.
10 degrees. Like, it was warmer than it said.
Well, a little bit warmer anyway. There was no frost on the windscreen that day.
Like, oh, it's only 12 degrees and it just feels like -4 and it's snowing outside.
not in Melbourne, at least.
No, Melbourne weather is ridiculous. Every day's a roller coaster. Okay. Today it was predicted to be thunderstorms and it was this beautiful sunny day or something. Like, it's nuts. Apple News, Geddes. There's been some Apple News, and you briefly told me iTunes is no longer a thing. What's up with that?
For a start, they've been spending time over in the US with the WWDC, which is their annual developers conference. They talk more than just development of the applications that they're putting on their devices. They also talk, you know, brand new gadgets, what they're keeping and what they're not. You allude to iTunes.
iTunes, that really struck me.
iTunes is no more.
What? Not just yet. What do you mean no more?
Well, it's been phased out because, you know, to be honest, how many of us are using streaming applications these days to listen to our music? You don't download physical music and put it on your phone anymore, do you?
This is very true. No, you just stream them off Spotify generally or whatever the other ones out there competing with Spotify are.
You do that.
Google Music.
You listen to radio Apple stations music. Online. You listen to podcasts. All these things have been within another application that has been on your phone, even if you've had an Apple phone. So, you know, they've thought, well, we're keeping this all together and, you know, it's not doing anything for us anymore. You know, we're not getting the sales we used to get on these platforms. So they're going to phase out the iTunes store. You know, I'm assuming they will have a bit of a cleanup of their applications for their desktop platforms. But certainly, you know, there won't be iTunes applications on your mobile phone. There'll be just podcasts. There'll be the Apple Music. I was going to say Google Music, but, you know, that's one of the many streaming platforms. Not connected with Apple, of course. You know, they'll have the those applications and the TV streaming apps as well. And that will be your direct replacement for, you know, this sort of function on your both your mobile phone and your computing devices as well.
Now, when you put it like that, it makes sense. It's just when you say iTunes is no longer a thing, and iTunes has been such a staple of Apple since the very beginning, to say it's no longer a thing, iTunes is almost synonymous with Apple, and then to say it's no longer going to be a thing, you're like, what? But then when you sort of explain it like that, that makes total sense.
And when you think of it as well, people have had a love-hate relationship with the application as well. It's not necessarily the best app to use for everything.
Now, I've been pretty fortuitous not to have to use iTunes for such a long time because I've never owned any sort of Apple products my entire life, so I've never had to deal with it. I remember one time, actually, I did have to put it onto my computer to access something, and it was just so, maybe some music or something, years and years ago, and it was this clunky program. It was slow. It took up a lot of space. It hogged a lot of RAM. And that was just sort of the PC version of it. And I'd seen iterations of it every now and again. And it just every time I went to use it, it just seemed like it's clunky sort of mess. Now, it probably has improved a lot since what I described. But, yeah, I never really remembered it being the smoothest, easiest to access, intuitive interface solution. So if they can segregate everything. And so, I just want podcasts. I can just go to podcast. If I want to watch a movie, I just go to the movie. Or if I just want to listen, I go to Apple Music. It totally makes sense to have individual applications for whatever I wanted to do on that particular day.
And that's how people do it these days. But that wasn't the only thing that was going on at this developer conference as well.
What else exciting, you know, stuff?
Rolling out new software updates to the tablets so that, you know, an iPad becomes more than just a larger version of a mobile phone's operating system. You know, they're making it to the point that you can, you know, turn your tablet horizontal and be able to multitask with dual applications open. You know, really making available, you know, the screen space of some of the higher end devices. You know, the iPad Pro that they've got these days. They've done updates to the iOS for the mobile phones as well. They're claiming it will be a lot faster than it has been. There'll be a dark mode color scheme for it as well. People have been missing that one for a little while. Updates to the tvOS platform. And what's been missing for a little while has been a new Mac Pro computer as well. They've, of course, had the iMac Pro, but if people don't want that big screen and all-in-one functionality, they just want a big, gutsy desktop, Mac Pro has been where it is. This one is being coined the cheese grater, and it certainly does look like a cheese grater with the way that it sits in its metallic function with all those holes down one side. But this is a beefy demon, which is meant to have 28-core Xeon processors, up to 1.5 terabytes of memory, 8 PCIe slots, so you can put all sorts of cards in there as well. And, you know, this will be the beefy demon for video editing and the like, even a bit of, you know, 3D generation as well. All of those power-intensive applications. And there'll be a few users out there as well who will be using it for server-grade applications, no doubt.
That's hilarious. I just put up a picture of it. I hadn't actually seen that until you started talking about it. That is hilarious.
But I'll tell you
who
what else
designed
is...
that?
Oh,
you could literally grate cheese on that. 100%. I guarantee you there's going to be YouTube videos.
Someone will do
of
it.
Somebody grating cheese on the front of that thing. Like but, that. And it'll be like, what else can we grate? Carrots, cucumbers. It'll be like an infomercial. But wait, there's more. It can also grind apples. It can spiralize. We can do your potatoes. We can make chips. We can make potato cakes. But wait, there's more. Order now and you'll get a second cheese grater. You know.
You know what? But wait, there is more. The Apple Pro Display that they've released as well. The Pro Display XDR. This is a 32-inch display. You know, it's showing all these staggering signs in terms of its feature set. This display is in the $4,000 to $6,000 price range.
But wait,
if you want to stand with it, that'll cost you an extra $1,500 as well.
For a stand?
You've got to buy the stand as well.
What?
You don't get the stand
this
with the screen.
This is classic Apple, like.
Well, after
so
the...
So you just prop it up on a cardboard box or something.
After the Mac Pro efforts in the last couple of years, the iMac Pro, they allowed people to take it off the stand, the traditional stand that they have, and use Visa mounts. But the Visa mounts that they were selling with them were just no good. And they were actually breaking people's machines as well. So, you know, this has been their solution to the problems they had last time. And all of it is splashing more ridiculous amounts of cash. People who have dispensable incomes to spend on this garbage.
Yeah, and that Mac Pro was, what, $6,000 and then... $1,500 for the stand and blah, blah, blah.
$4,000 for the display, all that sort of $7,000
for the screen. Like who? Maybe like high-end corporate creative agencies that like to be all, we're disruptive and new and fresh and we're going to, you know, have cheese and a cheese grating machine, like a $6,000 cheese grater. They're the people who are going to buy it. But your everyday consumer, I don't think many people are going to have that. But that's fascinating news nonetheless.
I think you'd prefer a mortgage than buying an Apple device in the future.
You could buy almost a brand new car or a down payment on a house or something. In Toowoomba and you'll have 5G. You have a brand new house, you have 5G, you save your money.
No, don't mock Toowoomba. It's home of the Wii Spa.
What is the Wii Spa?
They're a frozen delight. Go to the supermarket, have a look.
I thought it was like a jacuzzi, like a spa that you could Wii in.
Oh, I didn't say Wii Bar. Wii.
Oh, I thought you said Wii Spa. Oh, Wii Spa.
W-E-I-L.
Yeah, no.
I'm now familiar. He's here. Now he's here.
I thought you said Wii Spa. Like W-E-E-S-P-A. Wii Spa.
Oh,
I was like,
no. What
is that? I need to move to a
you know what?
I'm a big fan of Wii Spas.
This is no fetish podcast.
The mango one, Geddes. The mango one is my favorite.
The mango one is great.
That's a different podcast.
Google it if you don't know what we're talking about.
W-E-I-S.
W-E-I-S. Weiss.
Yeah. Delicious. Do you know what else is a bit fun, a bit exciting? And I know you're probably going to talk about saving money. Forget about that down payment on a house or a new car or the new Apple Mac
Pro. I'm just busy paying off my car.
Yeah, no, forget that. Sell your car and start putting your money towards this. The International Space Station are now allowing tourists on board.
That's when you know you're getting short of dough on this product.
You can buy a ticket to visit the International Space Station. How cool is that?
These wouldn't be cheap, I wouldn't think.
Well, look, prices start from a modest $35,000 per night.
Whew. It'd take you a few nights to get up there as well.
Well, no, that's just for the stay on board the space station. So that's paying for your your hotel room, essentially.
So it actually It'll cost you...
Yes, you'll need a ride. You'll have to get there somehow. So you're going to have to pay for your plane ticket. So say you're trying to stay in Paris and you're flying from Australia. You got to pay your plane ticket to get to Paris. You got to pay for your hotel in Paris.
Same thing you're not catching a plane up there, though.
you're catching a rocket ship to the International Space Station. Now, there are two ways to get there. SpaceX, Dragon Capsule, and then Boeing are also working on one called the Starliner. So those are your two airlines or space airlines that you'll be able to catch your flight. So the ticket for that it hasn't been announced. How much they'll charge, SpaceX will charge or Boeing will charge for the ticket to get to the space station, we don't know. Currently, the big government contracts, when they shuttle the astronauts up there, SpaceX charged NASA $60 million per flight. Now, that probably covers, you know, everything and it's all for NASA. Now, if you're just hitching a ride on, say, some cargo or they're resupplying and you're just catching a ride, I'm sure they'll do you a bit of a discount. But we're still looking at probably, you know, a few million dollars to catch the ride. And then once you're on board the space station, $35,000 per night for your hotel room. Now, they're only allowing two private astronaut missions per year. And they're going to be from 2020 onwards, a year.
To be honest, I think they wouldn't get any more than two a year anyway at that sort of
figure. You never know. There are a lot of millionaires and billionaires out there.
You've got to be absolutely filthy rich to be able to afford that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I think there would be enough of them. And $35,000 a night, I'm sure people pay that for crazy, ludicrous hotels in the Bahamas or the Maldives currently. And this is sort of a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I foresee this being booked out for years to come. We might not even be able to get... They'll need to build a whole other space station just for tourists. They could have this international tourist station alongside, and they could just shuttle people up and make it really huge.
You know what?
You can stay. How long do you reckon they'll let you up there? How many nights?
A couple of weeks.
You can stay up to 30 days is max.
Jeez.
And you're paying $35,000 a night for 30 or 29 nights.
I can't imagine the
bill. There's almost like $1 million, I think.
Really
$1,500,000.
Really can't imagine the bill at the end of it. It could be a redeeming function for Boeing, though, considering they're getting into this game, because they've had a lot of troubles with their airplanes.
Oh, no. What happened with their airplanes?
Are you living under a rock or something?
Oh, I've been on my electric skateboard all day.
Jeez.
Do you know that? Do you reckon that's the first time someone's paid to be out in space?
No.
Yes, you're
correct. No, it isn't.
If we were on a game show, you'd be winning a prize. So the first person to visit commercially as a tourist was in 2001 by the name Dennis, and he paid Russia, he hitched a ride, $20 million for the privilege to get up there.
But he was really keen.
Which isn't bad. Like, if you think about it, you look at apartments in New York or San Francisco for a house or a mansion in LA, they cost way more than that. Like $40 million, $50 million, $60 million for a house. And here you could pay maybe the same amount less, maybe say $10 million, and you can be up on the International Space Station for a month. That's incredible. And I'm saving now. I'm saving my pennies, Geddes. Looking forward to it. And that's about it for me for tech news of the week. It's been great.
It's been good to get together and have a bit of a yarn. It's been a long time coming. And, you know, it's been something that was put on the back burner for a little bit. But we're back and we're at it.
Yeah, and we mean business, because you got some exciting tech coming next week that'll make it all seamless, and I'm very excited to get it on and try it out.
something that we're hoping to ensure the reliability of podcasts and
reliability
maybe a little bit more.
And longevity.
Longevity of podcasts. There you go. Yeah.
Yes, there you go.
Absolutely.
No, until next week.
Until next time, it's been a pleasure.
With the latest in technology news and views, this is TechWrap, the podcast.